Excellent. All right. Well, we're going to step into our teaching time now. And so we're continuing this series through the Beatitudes. And there are eight Beatitudes, or these blessings. And so we are kind of ticking down to our time here. So we're going to move through. I hope to take my time this morning and really help us to be able to kind of go through and catch the rhythm, the movement, the trajectory of these, because it's really important in what I would call context, context, context. We do not grab a beatitude and just pull it by itself, throw it on someone. I've seen that done. We'll chat about it. That can be destructive, but there's a rhythm, there's a flow to this way of being and living with the Christ. And so it's important we do that. I'd love to pray, and then we're going to sink into Matthew chapter 5. We bless you, God, for this time, for right here, right now, the opportunity to tune our ears to your word found in the text. God, we desire to hear from you. That is what we need, and may our hearts be postured towards that. And so, God, may my heart, may the meditation, the posture of my heart, and the words of my mouth bring honor and glory to you and you alone, my Lord, my rock, and my Savior. And may we, as the church, have ears to hear and hearts to understand what you have for us as individuals and as a community this morning. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. And so, as we have come to this place each week, what we do is we want to set ourselves up on a mountainside, if we will. And so we'll throw that up first. This is known in Israel as the Mount of Beatitudes. And the traditional place anyways where it's understood that Jesus would have given this sermon, this talk. And so this is overlooking the Sea of Galilee, what is known as the Sea of Galilee. And so this is on the east, kind of the northeast side of the Sea of Galilee, just before, if you will, the Decapolis region, which is the 10 Greek cities. And so it's kind of in this space. But as we look out, we recognize, that doesn't so much look like a mountain so much as it looks like a plain, a field, maybe a hillside. And the writer Matthew is doing something by calling it a mountain, the language he uses. He's got a purpose in his writing. He's trying to set our minds on Moses coming down the mountain and giving the people the law, the Torah. And so Jesus here in this sermon, there's been a movement that places him in many ways the way Matthew writes or the writer here has it, to set our minds to a new Moses, bringing a new word, if you will. And so as we come up on this hillside, the way Matthew chapter 5 begins, it says that as Jesus saw the people gathering around him, as Jesus saw the people, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." This is known as the Beatitudes, this rhythm, this movement. So Jesus makes an announcement, and that's what it is here, is it's an announcement of who, if you will, is blessed. And there is a movement. The first four Beatitudes, the first four blessings are conditions. It's Jesus, it's God meeting us right where we are in the condition, the state that we're in. And so there are these conditions in which we are met. They were met in their deplored state, in their nothingness, in their spiritual bankrupt state. And then the next four, after the first four, are basically actions. The next four Beatitudes are actions based out of this place of once we've been met in our condition, the next four are how we meet others in their condition. Because we've been met in our mess, we meet others in their mess. Come on. So that's kind of this movement, and it's important because now this morning what we come to is blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And I find it interesting, it raises some questions because we've moved to like actions, and blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God doesn't all, in some ways feel like an action. So it raises like, why is this after extending mercy? Why does it land where it does? Well, let's get to the word. It says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. The word heart in Hebrew is the word lev. Go ahead and say lev. And in Greek, which the New Testament would be written, it's cardia. Go ahead and say cardia. Cardia, yes. And so what it means is, and this is so interesting, the soul or mind, the fountain and seat of the thoughts, passions, desires, appetites, affections, imagination, which is a biggie. But we look at that already and you go, the soul or mind, we would go, yeah, which one? And it says, yep. Okay, then it says the fountain and seat of the thoughts. Okay, thoughts, passions, wait, what? Desires, appetites, affections, imagination. Well, is it here or is it there? Uh-huh. Because here's the point. It's the whole self. This is about being an integrated person. This is about whole, complete, not divided. Because what happens is we tend to be people like in our heads, well, we got to figure it out, logical, linear. We're going to try and nail this down. And then there's our heart. Oh, this is how I feel. And we go, well, it's one or the other. And this is saying, no, no, no. It's the marriage of the both being united, being grounded in this place. And so we're going to live from that. And so I would say it this way. It's following mercy. Following mercy is incredibly needed, or else we extend mercy with results-based expectations in mind rather than grace and gift, which has been given to us, right? But if we don't have this integrated thing, then we extend mercy with expectations. Well, I'll give you mercy if you're going to figure it out, right? I'll give you mercy if you receive it and have gratitude and your life, like you change or you do what I think you should do. But here, when we're grounded and we're whole and we go, I've been met in my mess, and now when I turn and meet somebody in theirs, it's not if, it's because I have to. Because I've been met in my mess and I just need to do that. My job and my responsibility isn't to change you, it's to love you well with the love of Christ. And God's the one that changes hearts, so I'm just going to give you my best love that comes from Christ, and then you receive that. Oh, and yeah, I pray the best. Pray for change. Pray for a good reception, if you will, but I'm not in control of that. And if I don't have this grounded being, then I'm going to try and control it. And then I'm going to, and you'll see the movement of the whole entire Sermon on the Mount is going to circle back to this then. Don't try and control people through guilt and shame. Don't try and control people through good gifts. You'll find that later in the Sermon on the Mount. We don't have time to get into that this morning, but maybe another time when we will talk about dogs and throwing your pearls to pigs, which you all struggle with, and what exactly that means, because that's what's going on here. So many operate from an understanding of purity, and this is where it's a pure in heart will see God. Purity having to do with how one is seen by others. Or the God up there. How does the God see me? So we declare, well, that we're kind of out because, you know what, I'm not perfect. I don't have it all together. And that's what purity in heart looks like. Or they're not. Look at them. Like I can look at them and know they're not pure in heart. And we do this thing about how we are seen or even how others are seen by God. Like that's often how we do that. But here's the turn. Many think the pure in heart are those externally picked up and prettied up. So worthy. Then, Jesus' brilliant upside-down turn here, his flip, is announcing the pure in heart is not about how others view us from the outside, but how we see everything from the inside. How we look out and see, because it says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Where? Everywhere. And so it's not how we're viewed, but how we see out. So it's not so much about a conventional morality, which often begins with perfect, pious actions and a picked-up posture. Instead, it's about seeing, which begins with a heart that has been transformed. So I would say it this way. We'll throw it up. Jesus announces that purity of heart is someone who has been met in their mess, heard and rescued in their cry, right there, poverty of spirit, those who mourn. Then you are humbled and fortified in the journey through brokenness. This is meekness. You have been met in your nothingness. You cry out. And when you are found there, what that does is it builds up a perseverance. It builds up this fortitude inside you, a strength, because you have been taken through brokenness by God. Are you with me? And that does something to you internally. It gives you a strength that is not bombastic. It is not puff up the chest, look it. It's this, wow, I've been met here, and it's humbled me. It's strengthened me, and I don't have to puff up my chest and beat you down. No, I have a strength that's been building. That's a meekness kind of thing. And then now, because I've been met there and I feel this strength growing, I have a hunger and thirst for more, a hunger and thirst for that which is of God, righteousness, justice, and I hunger for that. So now my actions, extending mercy, is a desire for others to experience everything I've just experienced. Are you with me? And pure in heart now is when I'm in that place, when I see God in the midst of people. So I would say it like this. We see God then. It's as if we've received some sort of filter constructed of gratitude and humility. It's almost like a filter has been attached to us. So we receive things with gratitude and humility. We've been met in our undeserving mess. And so the first thing we see is the divine spark, the divine image in others. We don't see income, we don't see color, we don't see things that makes our head make judgments. We see the divine spark in others first. We begin there and we live from that place first because that's where we've been met. Divine image in each one. So we meet them in their mess. And this is important because the audience that is before Jesus is a mishmash of humanity. It says there are people that are pagans, if you will, and there are people that maybe devout Jews. There are religious people among them. They're all over the spectrum, and there's lepers, and there's deaf people, and blind people, and sick people. There's all kinds of people before him, and before he got to the sermon, he was going around touching, healing, loving these people. So when he makes this announcement, it's not like ideally, it's this is the way I'm living and this is how we should see life. It's here before you. So when he says, blessed are the nothings, they're going, oh, that's me. Blessed are those who mourn. They go, oh, that's me. They're all before him and he's been doing this, providing for these people, which, by the way, doesn't go well with the religious gatekeepers. Because when you do this, both the religious gatekeepers and the Roman Empire, in which the context he's in, they don't like it because what he's done is he's leveled the playing field. Hey, you all belong. You all have a place. You've all been created by God. What the religious say is you can't say that because then they won't come to the temple and play our system, in which we, by the way, benefit really, really well. If you don't tell people that they can only be forgiven unless they come to church on Sunday, well, how is the institution going to stay in place? Right? And so they've got a problem with it. Oh, well, you can't just say everyone. You can't just love everyone right where they're at. That breaks our system. The Roman Empire says, hey, you can't do that either. We've got taxes. We've got things to do here that make money. And, oh, by the way, you're kind of getting these people riled up. And that's a problem for empire. And so they don't like it. And they're like, no, you have to have unclean. You have to have people who are weak. And you're kind of saying, no, we all are like humans. And so what do they do? Hey, Jesus, we don't like this. And what do? They start plotting. How can we kill this guy? because he's wrecking our systems and our way. So to the religious, Jesus says this later on in Matthew. He says this, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs," that's not a kind thing, "which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean." Well, good morning. Like, there you go. In the same way, on the outside, you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. You have taken a posture that you think pure in heart is how you're seen, and you haven't taken care of how you see. Come on. So he is getting after it and saying some strong words to them. Now, what we want to dig into is this word hypocrite. It's hypocrisis. Go ahead and say hypocrisis. Yeah, it's the acting of a stage player. It's a dramatic, it's a theater term in the first century. It's where, like in the theater, they would call a great actor, you win the Oscar, you hypocrite. I mean, it sounds funny, but that's where it comes from. That's the point of it, is you are a stage player. In other words, they are playing from a part, not a whole, right? They're playing a part, not the whole. They're missing the whole piece. And I would say it like this. They're too busy putting on a show rather than cultivating a heart to grow, and that's poetic. Did we have that up on screen? Did I have that? No, maybe? It's okay. It's a good time. No, it's fine. They're too busy putting on a show rather than cultivating a heart to grow. When I wrote that down, I'm like, well, come on now. Let's dance. Goodness. It's a good time. So I don't know about you, but I grew up in this. I grew up in this, and I'd imagine maybe many of you did as well. With the outside, this is what we're going to really fortify and strengthen and put out, because this is what people can see. And so for me, this is what it looked like as a kid growing up. Church was about getting cleaned up, dressed up, Sunday best, right? Do you hear that? Like, put on your Sunday best, because apparently on Monday, God goes blind and can't see us. What? Hey, I'm the church today. No, you're not. It's Monday. You got jeans on, can't see you. Or maybe it's Sunday and you got jeans on. Uh-oh. Church was about getting cleaned up, dressed up, and strutting down the aisle to your pew, which, by the way, you have where you sit each week, right? And then with an oversized Bible to complement your oversized ego. Uh-oh. We have a culture that lives from the inside out, or the outside in, which is sad and incredibly destructive, because I saw that. I saw that before me, because I saw people that put on a front, and oh man, when things got messy and that became visible to others, literally they go, you're not welcome here anymore. We can't have mess. You can't come. You can't be a part of things. My family was actually kicked out of the church. You're messy and you can't be here anymore because you can't have that. Our society is driven by the outside appearances. Now, I don't want to make these things as just negative and push on it, but I want to give us an idea of what this looks like, to give us some pictures, some help. So I'd say this, do you realize the money needed each year to provide water and sanitation for all people in developing nations is $9 billion? We could provide water and sanitation for the developing people with $9 billion. The money spent annually on cosmetics, that is makeup in the United States, is $8 billion. Not saying that it's bad, it's just to be alert. It's just to be aware of some things. So it's just like, ooh, well, that's good to know. Again, so Americans spend $33,391 on average for their wedding day. I mean, that makes me lightheaded. On average, $33,391 average on their wedding day, and I put in there, that does not include the honeymoon, by the way. Not include the honeymoon. So this is largely about the view of others on us, right? On this big day, because, and here's the thing, how many of us remember the details of our wedding day? Oh, yeah, I remember everything to a T. You know what I remember of my wedding day? Of course, remember how beautiful my wife was. And then at the reception, we got married on the 4th of July. which is just a good time. And what we had is sparklers then, you know, when we're supposed to run out and get into the car and drive away. We didn't have a limo. We had my Volkswagen Jetta. Well done there. And so we were going to hop in this thing. And so people lit sparklers. And one of my buddies thought, you know what would be really fun is like 30 sparklers in my hand and light all those, which lit his hand on fire, which he dropped the sparklers. And my wife's cousin stepped on those. And so we're in this back room getting ready to run out and have everyone cheering. And we start running out and they're carrying her crying to the bathroom. And we're like, hey, what the, huh? Why is she crying? I think her foot was bleeding. And why is my buddy in the corner trying to put his hand? Oh, okay, well, bye. We're going on our honeymoon then. That's what I remember. Oh, and I do remember one other thing too. I danced to Michael Jackson, The Way You Make Me Feel, for my bride during the reception. And that was a good time. I will not reenact that now, but maybe on Monday when it's not the Lord's Day. All right. But the idea, what, we spent all this money on the day, how, and then we have things like the divorce rate, and we go, how much are we investing in the marriage itself? Like, but that day is about how I look, how we see, how people view us as we do this event, which is more of an external thing. And so we just at least ask some questions. Yeah, that's kind of the way we're shaped. And in a lot of ways, people don't bat an eye. Like, oh, that's how much, I mean, we might go, we see that number, but that's on average. Like, just apparently pretty normal. We have a relative that's like getting married, and they were just saying how much they spent on their dress. And my brain fell out of my head. You will wear that, you better wear that every other week. This week, Sarah and I were chatting with someone we know, and they were rambling on about recent awards they had won. They were name dropping all these important people that they know or work with, and I'm such a pain. I do. and this person, they're saying, you know, and I go, no, I don't know them at all. Who is that? Well, you know this person because they're really big in the community. Don't know who that is. And they're getting frustrated because they're dropping names because then I will view them as important, apparently. And so I'm not sure who you're talking about. And that, oh, it's just a good time. Sorry. But within this talk, they're like doing this, and then they splattered in some Jesus talk. Well, and you know, and then this, and I'm like, what in the world? It was the most awkward thing. But I wasn't sure if I should shake the person or perform an exorcism. I wasn't sure what, but why? I'm fine. You know these people. Well, good for you. Take a picture. You'll email it to me. I don't care. But why do we do it? Well, because then I'm important. If I'm attached to someone who's important, I think you're important because you're here. Well done there. I get to have this kind of, great, you're human. Not who, what, no. We exhaust ourselves and deplete our bank accounts to be seen, applauded, and esteemed by others, leaving us as a society drowning in depression. We have the most resources, yet we are far and away the most depressed people in the world. So says, like, our medication that we buy. Like, through the roof, we are the most depressed people, yet we have the most resources. Is there some sort of correlation? We have divided hearts and lives. So I had mentioned at the beginning of this series that each society has these four components that structure a culture, a society. There is kinship, family. These are one of the bases. There's politics, which is just in its baseline. Politics is how we have a united life together, how we organize a life together. That would be politics. There is the economy, economics, that is a part of this. And so there are these, did I get four? Three? Religion. Well done there. Religion. How about I leave that one out? Jeez. So religion. Now, here's the thing. Each culture, these four things are kind of the ground of it. And then there's always one per society that is the dominant one, and all the other three are subservient to it. In the first century, it was kinship. Family kind of drove things, and everything was subservient to that. Now, in ours, this is not really an argument, economy. Economy kind of runs everything for us. And that would be an external thing, though. We kind of do this. I hear people all the time, how are things going? Well, how's the economy? Unemployment, I just read, is at the lowest it's been in 40 years. We celebrate that. That's amazing. But we would say, economy good. So we have this. So the other things could be going like that. Yeah, you know what? We're killing each other. We're doing all, things are nuts. We've lost the plot. We can't have conversation. But the economy is good. My house is worth more. I know, but your neighbors are dying. Like there are things in which we just understand we're subservient. And so that is, you see that playing here on us because the upside down announcement of Jesus is needed now more than ever. A healthy dose of honesty, transparency, and confession are in order. What happens if that's where we began? Well, we're going to be honest. I'm not going to paint a picture of my best, like this is how it is, because what we can do is carefully curate a profile on social media. These are my favorite books, my favorite quotes. This is where I work. These are the things. It can be true, but what we do is we create a picture of ourselves that look really good. And what we don't see then is like all of it. And what happens if we began with, let's be honest, let's have a frank conversation. Let's confess with one another. And let's live from this grounded place that is from the inside out. Uh-oh, that's uncomfortable. To only play a part or to live from a divided heart has its roots, though. Here is maybe an encouraging theme from early on in the human story. In the first, what we know as the first book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, it says things have gone off the rails. Humanity has lost the plot. And it says this, the Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of what? The human thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. So you have thoughts in human heart, and what they're getting at is kind of this idea, is we've lost the plot a bit. Now here's the thing. This word thoughts in the Hebrew is the word machshava. Go ahead and say machshava. Machshava, and the B is a V, how it's pronounced. Machshava, thoughts. But listen to what it is. Device, plan, imagination, artistic expression that creates or invents. It's the imagination. It's our creativity. It's how we go about cultivating life. That has lost the plot. What was needed then and what's needed now is that we have a renewed, restored, a recaptured imagination by our Creator, which will help us co-create in a healthy, holistic way. And that we don't have a divided, broken imagination, a machshava. We need that recaptured and renewed. We're in need of having our imaginations restored so that we will see the beauty all around us and help create beauty once again. This would extend mercy and create calm rather than chaos. Shalom is the word, peace, which means wholeness. It's not just the absence of conflict, it's the wholeness of life. And we're going to hit that next week. Blessed are the shalom makers, for they will be called children of God. We're going to get there. So Cynthia Borge, she is this incredible instructor. She's an instructor at the Center of Contemplation and Action, or Action and Contemplation. She says this, the heart is not for personal expression, but for divine perception. How we see, the heart helps us see. How we see, what we see. So we're not vomiting on social media all of our knee-jerk reactions to the latest news circus. Oh, no. I'm grounded. We'll take it in. And I'm not just spitting out these, like, well, I'm just expressing myself. Yeah, I know, but it's not just for expressing, but it's for seeing God. And so what I say matters, and I'm actually going to take that in and say, is it from a centered whole place? Purity of heart is letting go of how we are viewed by others and humbly asking God for divine spectacles to see others. Okay? Purity of heart is letting go of how we are viewed by others and humbly asking God for divine spectacles to truly see others. And I would say it like this: confession and contemplation help us craft character. Confession and contemplation, this centered prayer, this place of, I'm going to own my part. I'm going to be honest where I am with life, and I'm going to be able to sit, and I'm going to reflect, and I'm going to take it in, and I'm going to be centered, and I'm not just going to knee-jerk everything, and I'm not just going to run away. I'm not going to live a life of road rage in all aspects of life. No. Because we're developing character here. How desperately our world needs this to live from the inside out. There is a need for us to ask questions about the place from which we are acting out of. Is it from a place of humility, gratitude, honesty, and calm? We need to slow down, examine our interiors, and live from a center that is whole, that is upside down. Do you not think that would be upside down today? If you were like, let's deep breath. Hey, can we have a conversation? What? No, just throw a brick. No, we're going to talk. Whew, you're pretty heated. You're really passionate about that. Tell me more about why. Where did you get that from? Like, what informed you? I'd like to have a conversation. Imagine that. Do you have some feelings? I do have some feelings on it. But I want to make sure as I express them, I'm not losing the plot. And so I'm going to take some breaths. And just let you know, I do have some feelings on it. I have some personal stories that are even connected with this. But I'm not going to confuse that and claim it as the truth. There might be some truth a part of it. But oh, by the way, in my rightness, I'm sure there's some wrongness. And in your rightness, I'm sure there's some wrongness. And we'll talk about that a bit next week with peacemaking. Pure in heart isn't so much how we're seen, but how we see everything else, which is about. And this is the thing that was so interesting, like, as I think through and pray through, and as I, like, studied, this is an action, and yet there's not a whole lot of action that you go, well, what we do is how we figure this out is I give you an assignment. I give you something to do. No, there's the things we can practice of actually slowing down. It's actually cultivating our insides, which isn't so much about a thing we do out there, so much as a space that we create and a time we take in order to say, hey, God, clean it out. Hold me together. Let's think through this before I just respond and react. But it's this practice of prayer, contemplation. We're gonna meditate on God, which is just to sit over God, under God, in God, God in us, and just to let it swirl. Center me, ground me, hold me together, recapture my imagination. It's questions, it's practices of writing this stuff down. Where's my head right now? Hey, God, marry my head to my heart, and let's work this out. So it's almost one of those things, what I need for your action is for you to be inactive a little bit. And to be able to take some time. And again, some of you just got sweaty doing that. Oh, we got production to do. I know. But before we go producing things, let's make sure that we're making it from a place where our imagination, that which invents things, as it said in the Makshava, is captured and centered on God. So now we're not making things for the ego. We're making things as an act of worship. So it's this centered place. Ooh, I need this. I need this. I need this. So I begin there. I need this. And my guess is you do too. So I would just love to take some time. We were talking about what is a practice, and I'm like, time of reflection. We can play some music, we can sit, but let's not rush. And let's sit with, what's swirling? What's running around in my heart and my head right now? Hey, God, can we calm? Can we just sit? I want to be centered on you. So as I go knowing that you go with me, I want to go with you. So we're just going to take a couple minutes and begin there so that we live from a pure heart. Not perfect as in static, but a mature heart. That's what perfect in the scriptures means. Mature. So I'd love to pray, and then I would love to just sit while we hear some noodling. And then maybe we can sing together. Would you pray with me? Oh, gracious God, you are good. God, I need you. And I want to live from a place in which you have met me in my mess. You have met us here in our mess, in our lack, in our poverty of spirit, in our crying out. And you begin to restore us. And you, God, meet us there. And in putting us back together, may we have humbled, strengthened hearts from which we move out of that. We just have this growing hunger for more of you, more of that. So that as we extend mercy, as we begin to meet others where they are, God, it's our prayer that we meet people as you met them, as we see in Jesus, how you met people. We want to live in that way. Help us do that. And we would not do that from a place of expectation, but a place of contemplation. Of we're going to love and love well. And we trust you, God, that you're always, always meeting people. And if you use us to meet people and you cleanse, clear their heart, and you're calling them to you, and you use us in that, what a gift. We offer that gift. We want to be that gift to others because you are that gift to us. And may we live from that place. May we have eyes to see from that place. So God, wash and wax our hearts even now. And so we sit here with you in the name and in the power of Christ.